Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are delighted to be here in Crawford County, the home of Justice Pfeiffer, for today's oral arguments. As our viewers have probably noticed, we are not in a courtroom. We are holding oral argument today at Bucyrus Secondary School. The goal of off-site court program is to teach students a little more about our judicial system. So holding court in a high school campus is an excellent opportunity to expose students to this court in action. Thanks to Bucyrus City Schools, to Superintendent Kevin Kimmel, and Bucyrus Secondary School Principal Mark Burke for making arrangements for the Little Theater to serve as our temporary courtroom today. Thanks also to Jay Wagner, President of the Crawford County Bar Association, for organizing our visit, and to Common Pleas Court Judge Russell Wiseman for inviting the Supreme Court to Crawford County. I should also recognize Crawford County's two other judges, Stephen Eckstein, who's on the probate juvenile court bench, and Sean Luthold, who presides at the municipal court. We have three cases on the docket today and seven area high schools that will attend oral argument. Welcome, students, and thank you for being here today. I will now call our first case, and it is case 12-1782, the State of Ohio versus Jeffrey McLaughlin. For the appellant, Ms. McGrath.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'm Mary McGrath on behalf of the State of Ohio. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Could you speak up, please? I can't.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll pull it closer. Thank you. The state seeks an opinion from this court that in a domestic violence prosecution, the state is not required to prove the victim and defendant shared living expenses in order to prove that the victim was cohabitating with the offender under Ohio Revised Code 2919.25F2. It is the state's position, and hopefully the holding of this court, that evidence that establishes that the victim and the offender live together in a boyfriend-girlfriend type relationship under the same roof is sufficient in order to establish the element of household or family member, person living as a spouse, and cohabitation.
Counsel, it's really more than just boyfriend and girlfriend. Not all boyfriends and girlfriends live together. This is more approaching a spousal relationship, is it not?
It is. And in our case, Your Honor, in McLaughlin, it was our position that the offender and the victim did in fact live together. The undisputed testimony was from the victim that she and Mr. McLaughlin were boyfriend and girlfriend. They had known each other for 2 years. He moved in with her into her apartment, and they lived together for 1 year.
Did he have a separate residence?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
And much is made of the fact that he didn't even have a key to the apartment. Now, can you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't believe that the testimony really demonstrated that he did not have a key. The victim's testimony was that he rang the bell and that she let him in. In fact, it is in the record in a police report that, and if I may back up, I have no idea why that occurred. But it wasn't in the police report and a follow-up report where the victim had stated to a security guard after the assault to please take his key away from him. So while it has been said that he did not have a key, that certainly was not really the testimony in this case.
But there was no testimony about shared expenses. Who paid the rent, who paid the utilities, and, you know, presumably the other expenses of living in an apartment.
That is correct, Your Honor. There was no. And the only testimony we had to any kind of financial position was that both parties were, in fact, on disability, and neither one of them worked. However, it is our position, and hopefully the holding of this court, that simply by establishing that the victim and the defendant lived together under the factual scenario that I provided to you, that this was truly a living together boyfriend-girlfriend type relationship. They lived under one roof. No one was married to anyone else. No one had another residence anywhere else. That alone is sufficient without having then to go to the factors that this honorable court set forth in Williams to then sort of do a further checking of, does this qualify as cohabitation?
But Ms. McGrath, yes, the statute has specific requirements, does it not?
The statute has specific requirements to show that in order to be a household or family member, yes, you have to
it
be living
a
as a spouse.
Or a person living as a spouse.
Correct.
Is it your view that this is a person who was living as a spouse?
Well, Your Honor, what the state has, to answer your question, but what the state is required to prove is in order to prove person living as a spouse, we are required to prove cohabitation.
Well, you could either prove it would be a person who is living in a common law marital relationship.
Yes,
are you
Honor.
Alleging that?
No, Your Honor, we are alleging that they live together.
Or who is otherwise cohabiting. And so you're focused on whether or not they are cohabiting.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you think they are.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that's how you get to our Williams decision, which says that you either then have a relationship of the parties in contrast to being strangers, and we've defined that they have to share either familial or financial responsibilities and consortium.
Yes, Your Honor.
Have you established all of those in this record?
We believe that we did, without having then to further go through the Williams factors and show that they did, in fact, share rent or other expenses. Because, Your Honor, for several different reasons, we may not have that evidence.
Was there any duty that Mr. McLaughlin had to lock the door, take out the garbage, or is there any evidence of that, of a familial duty?
There is no evidence of that in the record.
And there's no evidence of a financial duty?
That's correct.
Or sharing financial expenses?
That is correct. It is our position, however, that this, by establishing that they do, in fact, live together as a boyfriend and girlfriend in a relationship under the same roof, that it is assumed and that it can be established.
You want us to infer it?
Exactly. Yes, Your Honor.
And does that require us to modify our holding then in Williams about the familial or financial relationship and cohabitation to a new standard in the McLaughlin case?
Your Honor, I suppose what we are asking for is more of a hybrid, that where we have an established, undisputed boyfriend-girlfriend under the same roof relationship, that alone is sufficient to establish cohabitation.
But the Chief Justice points out not every boyfriend-girlfriend are cohabiting.
Exactly. So that's
how do we distinguish that? We've given you a test, and apparently the state's failed to evidence it.
Well, our position is that we have evidenced it.
I've asked you, where is the evidence of the familial or the financial duty and the cohabitation? You said there isn't any.
Well, I think by the fact that they shared, that the victim provided the defendant shelter, that's certainly a familial relationship. They lived together. He helped her.
Now, you would agree that the domestic violence statute does not apply to folks that we would regard as just roommates.
Exactly, Your Honor. And
if she knew this guy and he was down on his luck and said, gee, I've got a big apartment, extra room, why don't you come stay with me till you get on your feet?
Yes.
And then he beat her up, the statute would not apply.
That's correct, Your Honor. And if I may answer Justice O'Donnell question just a little more clearly, if I
She's
could.
She's the chief.
I'm sorry, Justice O'Donnell. I stumbled.
It gets O'Connor and O'Donnell get confused all the time.
The Williams factors would still be important. Our position is that once you've established boyfriend, girlfriend living under the same roof, that certainly there are other relationships that may not, as Your Honor pointed out, fit that definition, so that we would then look to the Williams factors to determine, well, is this really a familial relationship? And I believe in this case, by showing that they did in fact live together, boyfriend and girlfriend, committed relationship under the same roof, that we've established that they cohabitated.
Counsel, the problem I'm having, I think, is the one that the chief started with early on, is the key. Wasn't there evidence at the trial court that not only did he not have a key, but the residence was locked and the victim would have to let him in anytime he wanted to cohabitate, if we use your word? Isn't that a problem?
No, Your Honor, because I don't believe that the testimony was quite that. The testimony, in fact, was that...
I'm reading a direct quote that says she had to open up the door for him.
What the victim testified to was that he rang the bell and she opened the door for him.
And that's what's troubling me, is that in my house where I live, I don't have to ring the bell to walk in.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why that was the case, Your Honor. I do know that after this domestic violence assault, though, the victim did ask that his key be returned to security, and security had already obtained it from him. Why on this occasion, if this was an isolated incident, I honestly don't know. But he did, in fact, yes, you are correct, testimony was that he rang the bell and she let him in.
Counsel, did they share a bedroom?
I don't know that for a
fact.
That
wasn't introduced into the evidence.
The victim testified that he slept there every night. It was not introduced into evidence that they shared a bedroom.
Where's the testimony that they were romantically linked?
I think that this is a, by describing their relationship as a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, I believe that from that we can take common sense, ordinary human experience, as was addressed in Williams, and assume that, yes, this is a romantic relationship.
But these elements have to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. And in Williams, we were defined cohabitation, two things that had to be proven by the state beyond the reasonable doubt. Cohabitation being one, and then sharing of familial or financial responsibilities. So two things had to be presented to this judge. It was not a jury trial, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So the judge had to be presented with evidence of the individuals not just sleeping in the same house, but sleeping together, if we're talking cohabitation, and then also had to show financial responsibility or familial responsibility. Can you tell us the evidence that was in the record on these points?
The familial responsibility, Your Honor, I believe would be that the victim provided the defendant with shelter. They lived together. There was no detail. Did they share the same bedroom?
There was no detail about an intimate relationship between the two.
No, Your Honor, but again, our position is the application of common sense, the application of ordinary human experience.
I understand that, but you can't tell us if they shared a bedroom. There's no testimony of intimate relationship to prove the familial or to actually define what their relationship was. And, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend, I don't know, rises to the level of a description that we can infer an intimate relationship, even though they're living together. That becomes a problem. But on the other hand, you have evidence that he did not have another place to live. This was his only address.
That is my understanding, Your Honor.
And that's the testimony adduced at trial.
The victim did not testify to that, Your Honor, but that is my understanding from the court's docket, that this is the address that he provided as his own home
address.
That
in address. The record, before us.
I believe that the court's docket would be in the record, Your Honor.
But it was not part of the testimony.
Or in the police reports.
But it was not part of the testimony.
No, it was not part of
the police reports introduced as evidence at the trial?
I believe that they were not introduced as evidence. However, they are included in discovery and should be part of the record in this case.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. We'll have to look at it and see what the record actually says. But, that it is important. Consortium, how do you prove that?
The victim testified to something in answering a defense attorney's question. We were supposed to be nice to each other. We were supposed to be nice to each other. They were in a relationship, providing some kind of aid. It doesn't have to be sexual relations. Some aid, some comfort, some friendship, some help toward one another.
Well, in fact, a brother or sister can be in a domestic violence situation, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they can have separate bedrooms.
Yes, Your Honor.
And never sleep together.
Yes, Your Honor.
And they could still be guilty of domestic violence, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. As family members. the issue that we are presented often with is an unmarried couple living together where the assault actually arises out of the relationship versus the exact living conditions.
But counsel, under that circumstance where you have an unmarried couple, can you tell us why that would be difficult to show that there is a familiar that there is some sort of relationship or responsibilities? For example, could you not have asked this victim, did he ever cook meals there? Does he have clothing there? Does he keep his toiletries there? Does he have any belongings there? Does he have another address? Would that be somehow prohibitive for prosecutors to have to ask those questions?
No, Your Honor. And it certainly, this record certainly could have been more detailed. But as in other districts have found, in fact, that simple testimony that it is a boyfriend and girlfriend living together, that alone is sufficient to establish a familial relationship and consortium.
Even when there's no evidence that the boyfriend had another residence or may have had another residence where that isn't nailed down, it's sufficient?
I believe that that would have to be nailed down, that would be something that would be looked into.
But do we have it nailed down here?
I would say that we do.
You believe on the police report or the docket?
Well, and the victim testified he moved in with me after 1 year. He moved in with me. He slept there every night.
Well, I think what she said was he lived with me about a year. He has lived with you for a year at your apartment, yes. When you say he lived with you, he slept over every night. Right, right.
Yes.
So that's really the limit. That's what we have on the record.
That is. And it is our position that other districts have found that the evidence that the victim and defendant lived together as boyfriend and girlfriend was sufficient to establish cohabitation, noting that the factors in Williams are possible factors that might establish familial or financial shared responsibilities, but are not necessarily a checklist. This would be State versus Young in the 2nd District and State versus West in the 10th District that I cited in my brief.
If we don't agree with your view,
my time is up.
I'm going to let you answer this question.
Thank you.
Is the state in a position to re-indict Mr. McLaughlin? There's no question that there was an altercation between the parties. There's no question that, as a result, the trach tube had been pulled out of her throat. Ambulance was called, and she went to the hospital. Is there any preclusion on the state indicting him for assault instead of a domestic violence charge?
Because Mr. McLaughlin was convicted of attempted felonious assault, we would not reindict him. He was convicted of the attempted felonious assault arising from the same incident, so we would not.
And let me ask you the next question, which is where I was going. Would those be allied offenses of similar import?
Your Honor, they were not merged for sentencing. I don't know whether they would be allied offenses.
So as a result of the same incident, the court, based on the determination of the appellate court, the felonious assault conviction was affirmed and the domestic violence was reversed.
Yes.
And you're asking us to reinstate it, but whether or not it is or isn't an allied offense is really a question for another day. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, Your Honor. And if I may answer.
Yes, please.
The importance of having this victim found to be a family or household member, even for purposes of the attempted felonious assault, is that if Mr. McLaughlin reoffends into domestic violence, that finding then enables us to enhance
the penalty
in
a subsequent event.
Even for the attempted felonious assault, if this victim is determined not to have been a family or household member, it cannot be enhanced.
Okay. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
If we rule in your favor, he's already serving a 3-year term, correct?
I believe it was a 2-year term, and I believe he's finished.
All right. So he is completely back in the community. If we were to agree with you, would there be any resentencing that you would? There's no need for resentencing.
No,
in this
Your
case.
Honor, because the sentences were served concurrently.
Okay.
He's on post-release control right now, correct?
He is actually under indictment in another case. I don't know whether he's continuing on post-release control.
All right.
Counsel, wait a minute. I want to clarify what you just said. You said they were served concurrently. They were not. He served one sentence for attempted felonious assault, correct?
Yes, sir. And I believe that the domestic violence...
He only has one conviction for which he has served his time, or am I wrong?
That's correct. Because the sentences were run concurrently, but as you point out, Your Honor, the domestic violence was vacated. So he only served the time for the felonious assault.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Erica Cunliffe on behalf of the appellee, Jeffrey McLaughlin. We are asking this court to dismiss this appeal as improvident.
Can you speak into the microphone, please?
I sure can.
Thank you.
We're asking this court to dismiss this appeal as improvidently allowed. Before I go into the meat of what I was planning to say initially, I want to answer what I think was raised by Justice O'Donnell, and that is how this case would, in the event this court agreed with the state and sent it back. This is not Ms. McGrath's fault. There was another lawyer who represented the state in the 8th District, but the state actually conceded that the offenses were allied. He was charged under both domestic violence and felonious assault. The judge found him guilty of attempted felonious assault and domestic violence, and the 8th District reversed but affirmed the sentence for the attempted felonious assault. He's doing 2 years. He is not in the community. He is being restored to competence currently, and he's in a hospital.
Counsel, the 8th District, a lot of people live in the 8th District. I think it's page 11 of the opinion where they seem to conclude, although she testified he was her boyfriend and he slept over at the apartment for roughly a year, there was no testimony that the couple shared any living expenses such as rent and utilities, which would demonstrate shared familial and financial responsibilities.
Correct. That is.
Isn't that a little too narrow? And even if we were to come down on your side, wouldn't we need to write to say you've made it too constricted?
I dispute that the holding actually says that the state must.
Well, that's what they said.
Well, they note that there was no evidence of shared financial responsibilities.
Right, but that seemed to, they didn't write very much on this subject, and the whole case seemed to turn on that, and that's out there for roughly governing 10% of the people in this state in the 8th District. So shouldn't we address that either way we decide this case?
Well, Your Honors, this court has addressed this in Carswell and Williams.
Right.
And you know, when the 8th District held, the evidence was insufficient. They noted that in light of Carswell, that the evidence needs to demonstrate that the two individuals had made a decision to kind of share each other's life. And that wasn't demonstrated here. And then they noted there was no evidence of shared financial responsibilities.
Counsel, let me stop you there. That's what's troubling me here. I'm looking at a direct quote from the victim. She said, "He moved in with me after 1 year." Isn't that the classic definition of cohabitation? The victim said, "He moved in with me."
No. Intuitively, and with respect, Justice O'Neill, I mean, intuitively, we think co and habit, live with. But actually, both Webster's Dictionary and the General Assembly have made it clear that cohabitating means something in addition. And I take note that you mentioned about brothers and sisters living together and how that can be domestic violence, but that's under a different provision of the statute. And in this case, when unmarried or married individuals living as a couple decide to cohabit, they cohabit by living as spouses or in common law kinds of relationships, which speaks of something a little more in addition. And I just want to correct you. I'm not sure she said he moved in. What she said was, he lived with me for the past year. And the prosecutor said, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, he spent almost every night at my apartment. There's also no evidence with all due respect to Ms. McGrath, there's no evidence that he didn't have another address.
What did that mean when she said he moved in after 1 year? What's the after 1 year referred to?
I think she'd known him for 2 years. They were friendly. I'm forced to speculate because I have literally two sentences from Cynthia Robinson describing the relationship. And I think that that's the failure to clarify or draw that out.
So we don't know whether after 1 year means after knowing him for a year or after he was my boyfriend for a year.
That's correct. That's correct. And again, I'm not sure she said he moved in or he didn't have another address or anything of the kind. It was he spent every night. And again, since when does somebody in a marital relationship have to hit the buzzer and get permission in order to enter their own house?
Maybe he didn't have his key with him.
Clearly he didn't. But that wasn't clarified either. And this idea that he had a key that was returned to the doorman, again, that's not in the record that I reviewed, and I assume it's not in your record either.
Well, it could also be that she's decided this relationship is on a day-to-day basis.
Well, then that means that he's a guest, that they're sharing a roof, they're not sharing a life.
Well, it wouldn't have to necessarily mean that. It could mean that she was thinking about today maybe the last day.
Perhaps. And if the state had inquired further, if she had provided additional information, we'd have some more ideas on that. But again, inferences are fine, but inferences based on speculation alone is not a basis for finding proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Getting back just quickly to the idea that these offenses, that the domestic violence and the attempted felonious assault have merged, in the event that this court reverses and remands this case, it has to go back to the Court of Common Pleas, which means the state has to elect. And presumably, they're going to dismiss the domestic violence because he's already done his time in the attempted felonious assault. And they have conceded, and the Eighth
District... They were sentenced concurrently, to be served concurrently?
Initially, the judge in the Court of Common Pleas imposed the sentences concurrently, although he didn't find that they merged. In the Court of Appeals... they raised the issue of allied offenses, and the state said, "Yeah, they're allies. It's the same conduct. There's no dispute."
So why do you say
the Eighth District reversed the domestic violence.
All right. Well, that's what happens down the road is at this point, I don't know that has any bearing on the problem that we have before us, and it's the definition of what is a familial relationship. Especially, because we don't have any testimony about a financial relationship. There was no testimony that they shared expenses, that they paid half the rent, or he bought groceries, she paid the rent, they split the cable, all that sort of stuff. And oftentimes in relationships, one party doesn't have an income. And, so to have this language in the Eighth District's opinion that seems to emphasize a financial relationship as being a strong indicator. I agree with Justice Pfeiffer, no matter how we do this, I think we need to limit or correct that language, that is just one indicia of a relationship that would rise to the level that would be required for a domestic violence charge. Because, there's plenty of people who are not working, not contributing financially to a relationship, a cohabitating relationship, but they still have that type of a relationship.
I do. I understand what you're driving at, Justice. I think that the problem here is they don't, the Eighth District doesn't explicitly say, we're moving this to primacy. If you don't have this evidence, and I do recognize, if they both are getting separate incomes, the idea that they'd share financial responsibilities, that they'd have that codependence, the codependence that you're trying to protect in a domestic violence kind of situation, that unfairness, and that's the focus on the financial situation. They didn't say that they were moving it to primacy. And if they had added three words at the end of that sentence and said, or any other evidence, I think that we wouldn't even be here. But in this case, they didn't hold that shared financial responsibilities were the most important factor. And in fact, in the record that you have in this case, you simply don't have any other evidence. So is this the case to clarify this issue? I cannot see that it's the case. One, because it will have no effect on Mr. McLaughlin. Two, because the state's going to dismiss it after you decide it. And three, because really, it would only be restating the law that's already applied. And in this case, it doesn't have an impact.
And that supports your argument for an IA here, in prominently allowed.
That's correct.
And that's where you're...
Didn't this come to us, though, as a certified conflict?
No, I don't believe it. No, and I didn't get involved until until the court accepted it.
I'm not sure you've said it several times that if we reverse, they will dismiss.
Well, they could elect on the misdemeanor domestic violence. I'm sure Ms. McGrath will be able to clarify what they intend to do. But it seems unlikely that they would take what was an F3 that the defendant was convicted of and did time for and then say, well, forget that, strike that, do the misdemeanor instead. It just seems unlikely. But, I mean, I'm speculating.
Well, they would, but no, if we reversed, he would have a conviction, would he not?
He would have a conviction.
For both crimes.
Well, they've merged, so the state has to elect.
For sentencing.
Well, one goes into the other. I don't think he has a conviction. He would have. They would have to pick one because they're allied.
They're sentenced on one.
Correct.
The convictions stand.
For both.
We have case law on that. I'm fairly certain.
Okay.
So he does. He can only be sentenced on one, and the state has the election on which one. And obviously, he's already served for the attempted felonious assault here. But say you don't get the IA, I'm sure you would take an affirmance.
Of course. I just want to underscore that, you know, part of the problem here was that the prosecutors are really focusing on the violence element. And
focusing on the what?
The actual violence of the offense, because it was a felonious assault. And so really, that's where the thrust of it was, and the questions weren't asked, and the evidence wasn't explored, and
well, what they're interested in, as the prosecutor has said, is having this on his record, so if he offends again, there's an enhanced penalty. That seems to be part of why they're pursuing it. Perhaps the other part is the troubling language in the 8th District opinion that seems to be too narrow.
I acknowledge that the language appears narrow, but again, a holding is something that takes a position and really holds it. This is important evidence. It's not in here. This is the most important factor. And they did discuss Williams. The 8th District discussed Williams at length and the factors in Williams. And they didn't say, none of those factors matter here. The one that matters here is the shared financial responsibilities. They didn't say that. And so, you know, to take one sentence out of my...
I'm interested in your answer to the Chief's question is you're really not suggesting victory for your client through an opinion affirming?
Your Honor, if this court is going to affirm, then certainly we accept that.
But you're reluctant to. That's puzzling.
You know, well, I think it's because, you know, you take a position and you hold that position. You don't think of any other position. Sometimes there's a little bit of tunnel vision.
And your
there,
position
and so
is we should dismiss it without an opinion, as in providently allowed.
This court doesn't normally take, I don't normally find myself, one, as an appellee in this court.
We get criticized for doing that, though. For improving cases after they've made it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, I certainly wouldn't criticize you, particularly in this circumstance. Okay.
May I ask if your research shows that this is a confused area of the law with respect to our decision in Williams across mm-hmm. Ohio in the other appellate districts, or if this is peculiar to Cuyahoga County? I noticed they cited the Church case from 2005. And so this appears to be what the 8th District believes Williams says, and I'm wondering if your research shows that's different across Ohio.
All I can tell you, Justice O'Donnell, is that in every other case that I looked at, and I looked at a lot of them, obviously, and I obviously felt like I needed to distinguish what Ms. McGrath was saying, there was always another element in addition to the shared familial responsibilities. They were sharing a bed, sharing a room, he had his stuff there, he got his mail there, something to that effect. And so the court,
but what you're
those
saying
opinions
is there's
are not
just
saying,
a lack of evidence in this case to meet all of the requirements of Williams.
That's correct.
Counsel, are you aware, this was not a jury trial, but are you aware of any jury instructions that discuss this particular element for the domestic violence offense?
No, I apologize. I didn't even look at them. I know that if I were looking for a jury instruction, I would look for the Williams factors you know, for a complete list of them. I mean, if I were prosecuting them as well, but I am not aware of pattern jury instructions. I'm sure they exist, but I didn't look at them in the context
but
of this
case.
We
were to improvidently allow this case, then there would be the 8th District saying you need to prove evidence or you need to have evidence of shared living expenses, that's an element that needs to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt.
Justice Lanziger, I don't see this as a whole. To take one sentence analyzing the sufficiency of the evidence,
well, it's
and,
not
and
exactly
to say
that.
That's what they've done.
But that's not exactly. If you read the Court of Appeals, although Robinson testified that defendant was her boyfriend and he slept over at her apartment for roughly a year, there was no testimony that the couple shared any living expenses such as rent and utilities, which would demonstrate shared familial or financial responsibility, and then cites that as being a cord with State v. Church, which the holding in State v. Church, holding evidence to be insufficient to show that the victim was a family or household member as required for conviction of domestic violence, where defendant and victim, boyfriend and girlfriend, did not share any living expenses. Accordingly, this portion of the first assignment of error is well taken. I think that there's a pretty expansive and direct statement here that's what this court looked at, and it is in accord with one of their other 8th District Court of Appeals cases, State v. Church. So I think, you know, your attempt to minimize the significance of this portion of the opinion is something that I don't think I feel is a minimal part of it.
Yeah, that's clear. These decisions, if you look at Church, if you look at this, I mean, well, I've beaten this one to death, but if you look at Church, the relationship had long dissolved. They weren't that. I mean, there was definitely circumstances that made it clear that he was no longer or had barely been at any time a household member. And, you know, again, they picked out this one fragment, and in the overall sufficiency, that they found that
it was an assignment of error that the Court of Appeals sustained.
I understand. Obviously, it's my position that no grand pronouncement needs to be made on this and that the 8th District has not moved this to primacy. If the court feels that such a situation is necessary, there are surely better cases factually on which to provide this guidance, if such guidance is necessary.
But you understand, if we accept that argument this morning, the 8th District becomes the controlling law in the state of Ohio as far as recency. If we improvidently disallow this case, or just improvidently allow it, we're saying the 8th District is okay.
I think the 8th District got it right on the facts of this case. I understand what they said, and if they had just said, or any other evidence,
both
at the end of the whole thing.
Appellees come to us and say the Court of Appeals got it right.
Yeah, of course they did. I think my time is exhausted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Counsel, would it be victory enough for you if we affirm, but on different grounds, or that we dealt with this language?
Yes, Your Honor.
You would have had a good day, even though you lost.
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to see the language, for us not to be left with the language, as Justice O'Neill pointed out, that you've shown that there's a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, lived together for a year, but you still have to show more for sharing of household expenses. I would like to not have to be stuck, if you will, with that language in trying to prove future domestic cases. And if I may, right. One very quickly, if I may point you to page 44 of the transcript, the victim does testify that he did move in there. Defense counsel asked, we see in photos that there are things on your walls. Did you put those things up there? I did, the victim, and he did when he moved there. So there is some evidence.
And if I may quickly refer to Church, Church was a whole different situation. In Church, there was no testimony that the victim and the defendant actually lived together. They were boyfriend and girlfriend. The defendant was married to someone else. They broke up. The victim packed up the defendant's goods, popped him on his sister's step. There was no evidence that they had actually lived together in a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. And here, we have exactly what the General Assembly is trying to provide additional protection to, a person who is a household member. And in this case, this is the perfect example where the argument between the parties arose out of their relationship, not their living circumstances. Victim saw the defendant where she didn't want him to be in town, got into a fight when they got home. He said, I'm tired of this shit, excuse me, and then it got physical. That's an argument that comes out of a relationship, which is exactly what the General Assembly stated when they said, we want to give additional protection to those household and family members who are the victims of assault.
But that still requires an inference by this court based on the testimony. There could have been, obviously, much better questioning done of the victim to nail this down.
I agree. And I also agree with Ms. Cunliffe that certainly here the prosecutor was focusing on the more serious crime, the F2 felonious assault.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We will take the matter under advisement, ladies, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you very much for making the trip to Bucyrus today.